Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We got a real treat for you this time. We're going to be ranking Mortal Kombat.
You do know it was originally going to be like a licensed title based on Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bloodsport, right?
I did not know that. So it was Johnny Cage, literally, like, was going to be Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No, I think what I remember hearing is that they actually wanted to get Jean-Claude, but of course he felt that project was likely below him at the time.
Oh, it was. It's, funny thing is, like, the story of Mortal Kombat is more realistic than the actual story that Bloodsport is based on, which is totally fabricated.
Yeah, I mean, did Frank Dukes really beat Ogre at Karate Champ? You know, like, who knows? I don't think so.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Don't be a smartass kid.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Top 47K Games, episode 245, and we are doing Broken Sword: Shadow of the Templars. And that's a plural. I always read it as Shadow of the Templar. I guess it's a plural then. It was nominated to us by Broken Fantasy on Apple Podcasts South Africa. Which means I might have to apologize that we may have gotten to your review really late. I know a couple of them got lost in, we didn't check the other, the regional podcast stores. So, thank you very much for nominating this one. It was developed by Revolution Software LTD and published by Virgin Interactive Entertainment LTD. It was originally published on the PC in September 30th, 1996. And I am joined by a couple of people today. I'm Carl, and
I'm Tex Albam.
And I'm Bill.
That's right. We have Bill as a special guest from a different podcast that isn't an adventure game podcast, which is kind of weird. We dragged you out. What's your podcast?
Yes, so I'm from the RPG Golden News podcast, where me and my friend are playing 500 of console RPGs from what's considered the golden age, you know, sort of the SNES all the way up to the PS2.
And if you've ever complained with our show, because we trimmed our show down to shorter episodes, I listened to some of your show. It's much longer. You do go into a substantial amount of depth, multiple episodes on the same game.
Oh, yeah. We try and do it as best we can. We've just done a two-part one on the original Grandia. And I think we just did about 8 parts on Saga Frontier. Because, man, that game does go very, very in-depth.
it's a weird game, that one.
Not, it's a very weird one.
Not this game, though. It's a Broken Sword. It's a point-and-click adventure game, and it's... it doesn't... If you wanted to imagine a point-and-click, it's pretty much that. It's a... You play as George Stobot? Is that his name?
That's his American name.
Yeah. In my head, I always say George.
Yeah. Yes.
Just even playing it.
Is it Nico or whatever? She always says George. Yes. But he always introduces himself with his full name, right? Like a dickhead. It's like, I'm George Stobart.
Yeah, he always does it in a way that implies you should know him. He does. He also acts like that occasionally. But just one thing before we start, in case you've never heard of this game, that could be because you haven't played it or because you're from a country where it has a different name. This game has a lot of different names. So if you're from Germany, this might be called Baphomet's Curse. If you're from France, it's The Knights of Baphomet. If you're from Spain, it's Broken Sword, The Legend of the Templars, not The Shadow of the Templars. And if you're from China, it's actually just Broken Sword, The Shadow of the Templars, but in Chinese.
I think wasn't the North American version also renamed Circle of Blood?
It is, yeah. It's Circle of Blood. Unless you play it on the Game Boy Advance or PlayStation, then it's still Broken Sword, The Shadow of the Templars.
They couldn't be bothered to change
PlayStation
the box
up. No.
Yep. So not even within the same country, this has the same name.
Yes, and I had the PlayStation one port.
that was the first time I saw this game.
Yeah, with the aforementioned PlayStation mouse.
Ooh, this one's the PlayStation mouse? That's great.
Better.
I mean, you shouldn't play this on a PlayStation, but if you do it, you may as well use the mouse.
The mouse is great, because you can play the Command & Conquer with the mouse, can't you? It's like the other... There's like four games that support the mouse.
You can play Red Alert Retaliation with the mouse. You can't play the original Command & Conquer with the PlayStation mouse. That has no mouse support. It also doesn't support the Mega Mouse. If you played on Saturn, you're bound to a controller with that one.
Well, it's okay. We're not playing that one. And Shadow of the Templar. I first saw it on the demo disc for the PlayStation 1 to get an idea that this game was actually kind of pushed quite heavily, and it was very well received. Certainly when it came out, 1996-ish, later-ish, but really high production values in appearance. Like really cool digitally painted backgrounds. It's all done in Photoshop, check it out. And well animated.
Yeah, the original backgrounds were all hand-drawn and then loaded into Photoshop, and then they used Photoshop to color it all in.
Yeah, which you don't notice. It does a decent job of looking not watercolor, but properly painted. So it doesn't have that digital artifacty look.
No, they were very much going with like the Disney style of animation when they wanted to set this one up. And they used Don Bluth Studios to help with a lot of the artwork.
Oh, really?
I was actually going to say, it looks more Don Bluth. And I'm glad that they got Don Bluth Studios involved, because, yeah, it's... Don Bluth has a way of he doesn't really draw humans anymore, as far as I know. But they have a sort of, there's a Don Bluth human. You can look at him, and some of the characters in this look kind of Don Bluthian rather than Disney.
I think they move it as well. You could tell that with the clown from the start of the game. That one works a little bit like Dirk the Daring, very like fluid motion. I'm surprised. Yes. I mean, I know it's true, but I'm surprised you can even start Photoshop on a 1996 computer without it just bursting into flames.
Photoshop used to be a very lean program that worked really well. It's hard to believe, but, you know, that's why it got popular. I really like, you mentioned the clown. I love the start of this game because it is the main character, George Stobot, just kind of slumming around somewhere in Paris, France, and then a clown shows up and he's just like, well, screw you, and burst one of his balloons with a toothpick?
Like, yeah, he's ogling the French waitress.
Yeah. It's... What? Why is this character introduced as, like, the worst dickhead around? Because he's not really portrayed like an asshole, but he's not like one.
I've got something to say about that, but...
So, very quickly, the game establishes that you're going off on an exciting sort of mystery quest kind of thing. Interesting that this one obviously came out before the, was the Templar stuff really popular yet? I know it was used in, like, schlocky movies and stuff, but this is well before, like, Dan Brown's books and stuff that...
Yeah, before Dan Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was past Last Crusade.
That's right. And even lampshades that, right? Because they mentioned, this manuscript, what, like, we're gonna call Indiana Jones, like, from the entire audience, on that one.
Yeah. Don't mention the more high quality product that you rip off.
That's Rule One, yeah.
Yeah, this I don't all, think this game is from... bad, but it's not Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I'm afraid.
Yeah, this all came from Charles Cecil. He'd read the book, Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, and got really into the Templar stuff and thought, oh, off the back of this, I can make a really cool game.
It does show, because it does, it really bounces around with, the story is pretty interesting. Like, you'll be like, ooh, like, there's like two, three mysteries kind of going on, at once that you kind of find bits and pieces of that are connected. You know, like, you got the murders going on because immediately a bomb goes off in the restaurant in Paris. It's not a spoiler. It literally happens in the opening cutscene.
It's a very linear story.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really linear story where they sort of, they try and, you basically just go from puzzle to puzzle. And compared to most sort of point and click adventure games like Monkey Island and things like that, it is very straightforward with the problem solving. Like, yeah, you have an item or you have a subject to talk about that will solve the next part of the puzzle. And it's not like there are some really crazy things that just make absolutely no sense, you know, like pixel hunting and things like that. It's one of the things that, Charles Cecil, who made this game, tried to avoid making it too complicated.
Now, this wasn't their first point and click, was it? They made a couple of games before.
Beneath the Cold Sky, is it?
Beneath the Steel Sky, yeah.
Steel Sky, that's
They also made Love the Temptress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, the reason I know this is this game runs on the engine that the previous two games that he made runs on as well. So they didn't have to even make that much for this one. They just
it was a more advanced version of the Virtual Theater engine. And they actually did a lot of programming work on the sprites and the perspective, how they appear on screen when they're sort of going to and from the background. So as the sprite gets bigger and smaller and where they are, they actually wrote an entire algorithm for that, which was very unique to this game, which is like one of those small things that no one would ever notice.
Oh, it's actually impossible to notice. You really will not notice it.
I actually really appreciate that, because one thing that I generally like pixel graphics games, not all of them, but I generally appreciate it. But what a lot of them do is when they have a character go into the background, they just shrink it.
Yes.
And then the pixel aspect ratio is no longer the same as the rest of the screen. And my personal immersion rule is, if you use pixel graphic, everything on screen has to have the same pixel size.
So
otherwise,
I mean,
it just throws me off.
That stuff is like tough, because obviously
I know it's tough to do. So I'm not.
Yeah, like
I can understand why they do it. It's so much easier to just shrink the sprite.
I mean, it's also because like most modern engines don't work per pixel in that way. So you got to kind of write your own stuff, and then there's a whole scalability thing. It's horrible.
I know it would be a lot more work, but I really appreciate it when it's done.
I mean, in this game's case, there's so much work in this game. In terms of basically like. I'll give an example from really, like, early on in the game, Stobot needs to go through some trash cans. He doesn't have to, he's looking for clues, okay, so you can look through trash cans. And there's three trash cans, and he physically opens each can with, I think, a slightly different animation, and a slightly different thing happens with each of the cans. And there's like, literally no reason for this other than because they were like, hey, why not? Why not show off this? Because he could have just looked at the can and said, there's nothing in the trash can. They could have just said verbally, which is a normal thing, like, nothing in the trash can. But no, he opens things up. If they decide to let you investigate things, then they will make animations for it.
I believe the last trash can, a cat jumps out at him as well.
That's right. A whole cat jumps out and runs out across the screen, and it goes into the background. And the whole thing, it's got a lot of that.
It does. This was a time where a lot of characters would just vaguely stretch out their arm. And that's the only thing they can do to interact with anything. Whether it's like punching someone or picking something up from the ground, it's just stretching out the arm a little bit, and then just things happen.
Yeah, like all the interactables, like, again, like he gives a character a newspaper. So he takes out the newspaper. He sets the newspaper on the ground. The other character picks up the newspaper, reads the newspaper, and then leaves the screen. And all of this is just extra expense that you know, they didn't have to do. You go to a museum, and in the museum there's a guard, and the guard wanders all over the museum. He could just stand in the corner and just be like, hey, don't do that. But he wanders all over the screen.
Yeah, it was one of the things they wanted to do to make it feel a lot more alive by having, like, you know, the unique animations of George, the different things that he says for every interactual object, and having movable, like, NPCs actually walking around that you can still interact with. And then one of the things that they decided to do was to turn off the collision stuff in the engine, so that you would never get stuck behind an NPC. You'd always walk through them.
Yeah.
They didn't want that to sort of slow the experience down of the game.
Which makes sense, because it really doesn't matter if you get blocked by a character or not. Like, it's not like, whoa, God, I walked through a person. This is literally the worst game. Like, I don't... I know that American developers sometimes think that that's the end of the world, but it's not. It'll be okay.
Yeah, in a 3D game, it'll probably look a lot worse. But in this game, it's okay. And it actually works
quite well. Broken Sword 3 is 3D, and it's terrible.
Yeah. I think it works a lot better here than it did in Love the Temptress. Because in Love the Temptress, the characters being dynamic and everything mainly meant that half the time they just weren't there when you needed them. So you were just hanging around or looking for them somewhere. Here, it's a lot more localized and it works a lot better, like the museum guard you mentioned.
Yeah, well nobody's really, they don't really move from place to place. Like, they're still in the same screen, essentially. So you don't lose track of anyone, usually. I really appreciate some other things in this specific one. It's a point and click, so... One thing that I like is, they've ripped out pretty much everything. You don't get to choose, look and grab and interact and stuff. You move the mouse or you move the PlayStation 1 D-pad around the screen, and it would be like, you can look at this, you can interact with this, you can talk to this. Like, there's no, you don't get to choose, not even like full throttle, where it's like the action menu of a few things. It's a context button.
Yeah, the right click was always the action button, the left click was always the look button. So you could look at things from afar, but yeah, if you'd get a little wheel pop up, say if you could interact with something, and then you'd get various different sort of hand things come up on the screen after you've interacted with it. So, you know, pick this up or move it over here, or even you get the little the hand thing saying, you know, pointing off screen if you can go to another area, or it would have a beckoning hand if there was more of the area to explore.
Yes.
And then George would walk close, and then the screen would pan over.
I like the pans too. They're pretty good.
This game was, there was a lot of love put into this game and the way it was made. And I think it's kind of one of the reasons why it's held up very well.
It's also,
it's a big fan favorite.
I think part of it is also, voice acting is pretty good. There's no, like, almost all the characters, a couple of them are, some of the very tertiary characters are not very, aren't great, but.
The accents are terrible.
Yes, but. I don't know, like, if I don't know if that's just supposed to be, it adds somewhat to the charm of the game, because everyone's accents are off.
Nico's is particularly bad, I think.
Yeah, they could have done better there, considering that she's the second protagonist.
Also, I don't want to be like offensive to her or anything, but she has like a really weird like character design face. Like, it's like weird. Like, it's like kind of pointy, and her eyes are kind of like melting.
I know what you mean, especially in the final cutscene. It's just like, you suddenly get a close-up of her, and it's like,
yeah.
Hang on there.
I mean, none of the characters look great in close-ups. It's like they're trying to be cartoon exaggerated, but they don't quite land it with a lot of the design.
Yeah, she's very fluid, but yeah, I do agree that it has aged well. This came out a year after A Beast Within, A Gabriel Knight Mystery, and that has not aged gracefully compared to this game here.
Well, I think because this game, it's fairly intuitive. It's the puzzle logic is mostly like, I need to do this. I will have to find a thing that allows me to do this. And then it solves itself, basically. Like, you're like, okay, this on this. And it's like, yep, that's the solution. You may go now. Yeah.
Well, you guys touched upon earlier about like the other type of adventure games. We normally just get like a slew of text when you're talking to people. You just choose your part of the conversation. Whereas what they did here was they added icons instead. So if you wanted to talk about the clown, you'd see the clown. And then quite often as well, decisions that you make follow you through the game. Like, there's a thing like in the cafe thing very early on, when you go in and you check on the waitress, she wakes up and she's a bit groggy from the explosion. She says, "Are you a doctor?" And if you say yes, when the police turn up, she tells the police that you're Dr. Stobart. And then for the rest of the game, every time when you interact with the two policemen, they will always call you Dr. Stobart. you get the option when she says, "Are you a doctor?" with like a thumbs up or a thumbs down to say yes or no, and then you'll just lie about it.
That's right. And you get a few options across the game, I guess, where you get the thumbs up or thumbs down rather than the menu of interactables.
It's good because it's good that it follows you through the game, and it makes it like when you do replays, like you might think, hey, I'm just going to lie about everything this time, then. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. What grated me a little bit in that is that, so you can talk about the clown, as you just mentioned, and George commits to that, very strongly. So even when he's in Ireland, which is likely the next location you're going to visit after France, he's still asking people about the clown. So the clown assassin probably did not board the plane in full clown makeup.
Have you seen the clown?
And it's also probably not the only clown in Europe. There's probably clowns in Ireland as well. So why are you still asking about the clown? Like, George, stop it.
But that's a joke. The game is funny. It has jokes.
Occasionally the humor swings a little bit because... Occasionally I wasn't sure what kind of tone it was going for. Especially, like, Nicole, she makes a couple of jokes. I'm not quite sure whether we're supposed to pity her because she's poor.
It's also clear how poor she is, because she lives in a cold, crappy apartment, which is furnished with amazing goods.
Yeah, also, her apartment is in central Paris, and it's about 1 square mile large. Like, well, it is. She has to pay, like,
yes, I've seen
a billion francs rent per month.
Apparently, that's just not possible. It's canonically cheap, because the old woman that you talk to outside says... You know, like, oh, it's kind of crappy, but the rent's cheap. Like, that's why she stays in the apartment, so...
It's probably cheaper in central Paris, but...
I don't think Nicole makes that much money. She's, apparently none of her stories get picked up at the journalism, like, newspaper that she works at.
That's the Libertaire.
Yeah. Is it La Libertaire or La Libertaire?
La Libertaire.
Yeah, it's... I gotta mention, freaking George has the most unlikely profession of, like, any goddamn character I think I've ever seen in a game. He works as a patent lawyer. That's his job, I believe.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm kind of surprised he still does, because I've got a list here of misdemeanors and crimes that George commits in the game. So we have trespassing, attempted assault.
Crimes.
Yeah, attempted assault, actual assault. Tampering with a crime scene, withholding evidence, lying to a police officer about a crime, interfering with an ongoing police investigation, harassment, impersonating a police officer, impersonating a medical doctor several times on different occasions, performing as a medical doctor without proper qualification, using explosives without proper qualification, and at least 12 cases of manslaughter. And that's not even the comprehensive list. So George just goes all out doing this adventure here. So he... He's nothing standing. So
I really like that when he does that, right at the start of the game, you can, like, there's a corpse, right? Like, there's a dead guy. And he just goes through the dead guy's pockets. Like, he just dives right in. And then immediately you can go outside and you click on something. He's like, oh, I don't want to disturb the crime scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he starts picking everything up, putting it in his pockets. He's boundless,
and then when the police shows up, you can lie to them again. And you already tampered with the crime scene.
In fairness, the policeman that turns up to try and do the investigation does claim that he's psychic.
So, that is true.
By all accounts, he does get the job done, apparently. So, you know, if it works for him, it works for him. He's doing all right.
He must make a fair bit of money as well from the amount he actually travels in this game.
He has to have some sort of flat rate ticket for inter-European flights.
Yeah, but then he goes to Syria.
That is true.
I like that. He's just like, oh, I think I should go to Ireland. And then you just can click go to Ireland.
Yep, gets on a plane, pays the money.
Yeah, usually you'd have to be like, I can't go to Ireland, I need to make money. Like, that would be the point and click adventure game thing, is you'd have to go hit, like, the Casino de Paris and you'd have to make money or something. But no, George just opens his wallet and $1 billion flies out.
No wonder why Nico falls in love with him.
Yeah. Also, apparently he just has a stack of tourist visa in his pocket we never see.
Oh, that's a very good point, yeah.
Nobody knows what he's... Yeah, I mean, maybe that's because the original creators are from the UK, so they didn't really think about it, because obviously I think they, at the time, leaving this open for the future, had free travel through, like, most of Europe, right? Like, in the UK, but...
George is American.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you can get a visa for that. And as a tourist, you don't always need a full visa, but you're still very casually traveling around.
Also, if he goes to Syria, that would actually need a proper visa. They don't. They wouldn't be comfortable just letting you in. But again, the game streamlines things out. I guess you don't have to fill in the visa application form and wait like a week or so.
But considering there is a guy in Syria who every time you speak to him, he's just trying to sell you a kebab. It just doesn't matter which item you go, he goes, you want to go bad?
The game's, it's funny. I like, it's, you know, it sometimes it's hit, sometimes misses, and yes, it does go at stereotypes, but it doesn't, I don't think it really, I want to say that it, I don't think it really punches down or anything, really. It just kind of...
Yeah, and George also gets a lot of criticism.
He deserves it!
Yeah, he does, absolutely. I mean, but my favorite scene is, and I don't think that was supposed to be funny, where Nicole says, oh, like, George, like, you're my only friend. And I can tell you, if your only friend is George Stobart, you as a human being have probably hit rock bottom. So I don't think that was supposed to be funny, but I found that pretty hilarious.
It's very funny. I really enjoyed the humor of this game. There are some bits that fall flat, like the guy who says the guy who claims that he passes out several times every minute, and then when you work it out, it's like, oh, it's you're blinking.
Yeah, my favorite running gag is that you can pretty much, so you get one of those hand electric shock thingies, and you can try to use it on every character in the game by asking them to shake your hand, and all of them have reasons why they don't do it.
Yeah, and you know, it does that. That's good comedy writing, right? Like, there's some good running gags, some good jokes.
Oh yeah, I like that one. The electric running gag's pretty good.
I also like that the introduction of that one is the guy at the shop that electrocutes him with it, uses it on him. And he's like, what the hell, you asshole? Why would you do that? And then he spends the rest of the game trying to shake other people's hands with it.
Yeah, I think George is one of those people who... He's so insecure that he has to electroshock everybody else he knows. Otherwise, he will never, like, mentally recover from having been bragged right. like that.
He feels like he's dumb enough to fall for it, so he needs to now find other people who are dumb enough to fall for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a little bit like him. He's not treated like... he's kind of smarter than the average, like, point-and-click protagonist. Like, you know, he's wealthy-ish. He's clearly got the ability. He's got the ability to read Latin, so he's not like, you know, he's textbook smart. And like, he doesn't really like fall for all that much, other than like, you know, the electric shock thing and things. But like, for the most part, he's not like a bumbler. He's like a fairly put together guy who can just actually get through life without like making everything a huge issue, which is kind of you know, because that's not really what a point-and-click adventure game protagonist usually does. They usually have, like, trouble opening doors and crossing bridges and stuff, because they're like, oh, God! And they just die, like, all the time, which he can do in this game. It's one of the only things that they kind of left in. A lot of point-and-click adventure games had abandoned killing the player at this point. You know, they kind of they fudged it, or they did a instant game over, straight reload. You know, like, they just kind of did, like, that. This game doesn't do that. It's a more serious game in places, even though we said it's funny, but you are actually put in life-threatening situations, and your character will actually get killed, and you have to restore from a save, which is it's a little bit of a bother. You do have to keep pressing that save button. Otherwise, you might have to repeat,
Yeah, there's a few of them. There's actually one where two gangsters kidnap you and say they're going to make you sleep with the fishes, and then you literally see them throw your body over the bridge into the water.
That's right. And then it's just like game over. I'm like, whoa, god damn, whoa.
the most abrupt one is when you're on top of the train towards the end of the game, where you can just make George touch the big electrical bit that's touching the wire, the overhead wires on the train.
Electrified if
he touches
wire.
It, he literally just collapses and just flies off into the distance. It just says game over. It's like a 2-second scene. Off he goes.
It's real life, you know? It's a little bit, the game, it can be, as you said, there's manslaughter and stuff, so it is, it's a little bit, it's not really like, it's hard to say it's mature, even though there is at least one dick-sucking joke in there, so it's in there. The old lady is really down for, looking for love, the lady is. She makes you say it, it's really funny. If you played the game, I'm not repeating it, but you can go play the game, and it is quite funny. But you're like, anything else about Broken Sword? As always, I have to mention music. Great. It's not like you're going to break out the soundtrack to hear it, but nice, like, assorted atmospheric stuff.
This is like one of my few gripes with the game, is the fact that at times the music is too loud and you can't hear
mix.
When people are talking.
The mix is a bit loud. Yeah, I turned up the game to hear the audio, and then the music cuts in. I'm like, oh, goodness. But did they fix that?
No, never.
Okay.
Even all the all the director's cuts and all the remakes and stuff that they've done have always used the original the original 8-bit sound.
Yeah, I don't think the director's cut is actually the better version.
No, it's not.
No.
Stay away.
It's definitely not. I think you can still download the original one from GOG. But
Well, basically, if you buy the director's cut on Steam or GOG, I suspect maybe they added it later on Steam since they went through and did a bunch of stuff on Steam at some point. You know, like various companies kind of added the other installers. Yeah, so you can actually get, if you buy the director's cut on PC, on GOG or Steam, and if there are other storefronts, I will assume those as well, you can just download the original version. Which runs fine. I was playing it on Windows 7 because I refused to update. It worked 100% fine. You could even alt enter it so you can run it full screen or not full screen. I guess maybe it's, is it running on SCUMV or something? Or
I think it's DOS, isn't it? I think you might need a SCUMV VM to make it run.
This, as far as I know, this runs natively. So I
does it still native?
I've got the disk version, and that one can be run natively.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, like, I wasn't sure what was it was running on my, but it works really well. It works just fine. You can still play it quite easily. Director's Cut, I know that the Director's Cut, I believe, is more of, yeah, it is more of a cut. I believe it rips out voice acting and animation in places. I think it cuts out a lot of stuff that isn't directly important to the story, which is weird, but apparently it does that.
It adds in a whole scene with Nico as well as a play.
Yeah, character. And then it adds a whole scene.
But the puzzle is supposed to be a bit naff. I think the voice acting's still there, but they kind of lined it up differently, and you kind of get these like weird character close-ups when they're talking to each other, which just takes up too much of the screen.
Yes, they're not from the original artist. They're all new. They're written by someone relatively famous in like comic books or something drew them, but it doesn't matter because they're just kind of boring, like they're fine.
But yeah, back on the music though, that was written by a guy called Barrington Faylong, who he did the Morse music, if you know Inspector Morse in the UK. He's an Australian, and he studied in England under John Williams.
Really?
Yeah. So little name drop there.
Yeah, the John Williams. So he did Remind Me. John Williams, music man, something about, was it,
Warring in the Stars?
Yeah, I think it was Star Trek. Pretty confident on that. That's where I'm putting all my money. No, but the music in this is good. So that's nice. You know, sometimes point and click adventure games, it's a mixed thing. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're kind of not so good. Anything else about Shadow of the Templars, the game, or I guess even the franchise?
Well, I don't think we can really talk about this game without actually mentioning the goat puzzle.
The goat puzzle's mentioned on Wikipedia.
I know. I probably, as a child, which is where I played this game the most, I probably spent at least, I'd say, 12 plus hours on that puzzle.
Is that supposed to be the hardest puzzle in the game, then?
Well, it's the one that doesn't like make logical sense. Like, I think you have to get hit by the goat and then quickly click on an object where George will get up and run over and then move it to the right, so then the goat can't get past it. It's like an incredibly simple thing, but you spend hours just clicking around, and this goat will just, if you get too close to it, will just run up and headbutt you, and you'll go flying, and then you have to get up and try again.
I think timed puzzles are generally a bad idea in most adventure games.
Especially if they're not really obvious.
Yeah. And this is the first time they kind of used that timed mechanic as well, and it was just like, yeah, it just
got
everybody.
They don't use it very much in general, do they?
No, I don't think so. There's a few of them. Like, you have to, right at the end of the game, you've got a very few seconds to decide to pick up the flaming lamp off the wall and throw it onto the gunpowder, which is like the very last puzzle. But if you don't do it, you get shot.
Which is, you know, that's the timed last puzzle is kind of somewhat of an adventure game thing. It's not an uncommon feature.
At least you get a
dramatic moment where you need to do something.
At least you get a game over with that one, so you know that is not what you're supposed to do if you do anything else.
Yeah, but on this one, it's just the goat headbutts you. And there is actually a story with the creator of the game, Charles Cecil. Apparently, he was in a taxi once, and the taxi driver asked him, "What do you do for a living?" And he was like, "Oh, I make computer games." And he was just like, "Oh, anything I might know?" And he said, "Oh, I made Beneath the Cold, you know, the Steel Sky, and Broken Swords." And then the taxi driver apparently turned around to him and said, "Oh, so you're the one I've got to blame for that bloody goat puzzle."
Really? Oh, wow.
And that was what he felt
sweating.
Like,
You'd be like, oh god, they played the goat puzzle game.
Well, they said it made him feel like a rock star. Like, it was the first time, like, he'd interacted with anyone just randomly who'd been like, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah. That also tells you how popular it is. This game sold over 1 million copies, I think. It's quite a...
It is quite popular, yeah. I would say...
Well, when they did the Broken Sword 5 Kickstarter, that made 800,000.
That's considerable.
Yeah, they only asked for 400.
Okay. Yeah, the series still... It's sort of still going. I think the Part 5 came out only like 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too long
ago. Yeah, it's kind of... They could make another one, I guess. It's kind of surprising to me because I didn't really think this one needed a bunch more games. Like, it's
well,
good.
Generally, the fans were very disappointed with 3 and 4.
Yes.
Because 3 went 3D and 4 was still a bit 3D, but tried to go back to being more point and click. But I think because of everyone so disappointed with 3, 4 never really sort of landed either. But a lot of people out there, like myself, really enjoyed the first two. And so they wanted more from Broken Sword, and the idea of them doing, like with Broken Sword 5, one that's very much more in line with the original Broken Sword, it was, yeah, like, well, it did extremely well on Kickstarter. And yeah, you can now get Broken Sword 5, I think it's in two parts as well. You can get it on iOS and Android.
You can get all of them on iOS. They'd put all the director's cuts on iOS. Well, I don't think they got 3 and 4 on iOS.
No, not 3 and 4, but yeah, well, you can get 1, 2,
don't worry about 5, those.
1 and 2. Yeah. There is also a Broken Sword 2.5, which is a fan-made game to cover the couple of years that were missing between 2 and 3.
Yeah, you can even
which is get, very much in the original thing.
Yeah, you can even get this one here on Palm OS, just in case you still have a personal assistant.
God, I did notice that. It was like it was released for like Windows mobile devices back in like 2000 and something.
So, I bet their custom scaling engine really sells it on Palm OS. Okay, we have to rank Broken Sword. We're going to have to do it. Now, I don't know. I may have forgotten or neglected to link my guest to the list, but hopefully that thing that I've dumped there may or may not work. But for anyone else, bit.ly/47kgames will also get you to the list, I think. So yeah. If you haven't been looking at a list, it's really big now, too.
It is very big, especially as a first-time guest and you're trying to think, where should I rank this?
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking through it, trying to look at other adventure games.
So,
I've got a good starting point here. Ed. Yeah, I was about to say that.
151. Loom.
You know what bothers me about Loom? That there's no definitive Loom version. So you can get the one with the talky version, or the one with the best graphics, or the one with the like best music, but they're all spread out, and that bothers me about Loom.
Yeah, Loom's... Also, I could never figure out the puzzles on Loom. I guess I'm an idiot.
It's designed that well. If you do figure them out, the game's only like 45 minutes long, so...
Yeah.
That's by design.
This game's pretty long. Even if you kind of power through it, it's going to be a couple hours.
Yeah. Also, if you don't know the rules of chess, the chess puzzle might lock you down for a while.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
People should know chess. It's... I don't know. Like, if you're... It's chess. I don't know. I don't expect the game to expect you to know chess. I don't know.
Also, at 139, we have Lara Bow, the Dagger of Amun-Ra, a Lara Bow
mystery. Dagger of Amun-Ra. Which is one of the only other games at the time that did the really lively Walt. That game has random characters just wandering the streets. It has cars driving around.
Has cars driving over you?
Yes. This one, you're not allowed to get run over, I don't think, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm sad. It's got to be better than Maniac Mansion.
Yeah?
I was looking a lot higher up the list than you guys.
Oh, it's okay. No, okay. We try and start conservatively, unless we're being stupid.
I'll say, it's definitely worse than Streets of Rage 2.
Is it?
Oh, well, anyone that respects Streets of Rage 2, I love Streets of Rage 2.
So do I. It's a top 10 game for me. But
I have no strong opinion on Streets of Rage 2.
How many times have you finished Streets of Rage 2, Tax?
I don't think I have.
Well, that's why you have no opinion on it.
I said no strong opinion, so I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know how often.
Dozens of times. I mean, scores.
I don't know. How often have you finished This Means War?
You know, we didn't rank that very well because I'd never finished it.
That's okay. Don't finish that game. It's just not worth your time.
You told me not to finish it.
No,
you said don't.
And I meant it. That's just not worth your time. So where even
Broken Sword is worth finishing, though.
Yeah, where even is Maniac Mansion?
Well, I would say it's better. I'd say it's better than you've got a Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter there at number 96.
Ah, yes, Dragon Quarter. The controversial placement of people that love Dragon Quarter and everyone else.
but definitely worse than Deus Ex.
Okay, so you do think, because you, I believe, are the strongest proponent for Broken Sword on this one. So that's.
I'd hope so. It's a very fan loved game. It's people who played this back in the day absolutely love it, and I think they'd still be shocked that I'm still placing it only just in the 90s. but I do also prefer Broken Sword 2, which is unusual. Most people prefer number one.
Yeah, I, yes, think I remember the first better. One best, but that's also the one I played more than once. I think I played the other ones only once per game.
Yeah, I prefer Broken Sword 2. It came out like a year later, so I felt like it was just a bit more polished, but people complained that the story feels a bit more rushed compared to the Templar one. It's like more of a Mayan Aztec adventure.
Well, okay, but, so I'm looking around here. At 100 at the moment, we have Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, which probably, yeah, it that's the definitive pro skating game in that style, right? Like, that's kind of the... This is one of the big ones. I guess after that, they just refined them all with better quality graphics and stuff. But
worse gameplay.
Yeah. Yes. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, that series has crashed hard.
Yeah, well, after Pro Skater 3.
Yeah. Now, 110, we have a game that is thematically almost the exact same. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
To us, I think this is way better than Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
Way better.
I'd say way better, too.
Ooh. Well, that game is educational. This one teaches you nothing but lies.
teaches you how deep an American's pockets are.
Apparently so. Maybe that's also
and,
a joke.
And that if you impersonate a police officer, there will be no consequences. Which probably isn't true in real life.
All right. So, we've got the Oregon Trail Deluxe at 102. Neither of you are American, so I'll be interested to see how you feel about that game.
Okay. I know Oregon Trail as the game that Americans care about.
Exactly.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's all I know about. So it
Let's
should
put
be...
it above that. So, Hitman Blood Money.
Can't comment on it, I'm afraid.
I think Hitman Blood Money is really good. I think for me, that's the high watermark of the Hitman series.
I'm willing to put this between Hitman Blood Money and the Oregon Trail Deluxe.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
I know that you have no strong opinions about these games, but that's at 102.
It feels bad putting it below Dragon Quarter, but
if you want, I don't know, like it's got Garou and Satin Bomberman, but do you want to put it above Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3?
Yeah, go on.
I'd be okay with that.
I'm happy to put it above Super Meat Boy because I like this game more than the Super Meat Boy. I probably wouldn't put it above Satin Bomberman, to be honest.
Go on, sticking in number 99.
Yeah,
99 it is.
Has to make the top 100.
All right, Broken Sword, Shadow of the Templar. We're putting it in at number 99, above Super Meat Boy and below Satin Bomberman. The great thing about this one is it has aged quite well, and also it's still apparently playable on just about everything, including your phone if you're willing to tolerate the director's cut. So if you missed it, you can still play Broken Sword, and it's still just about as good, really. I mean, it's just nice, it's well-produced, it's a great game.
Yeah, holds up nicely, especially if you're a fan of like 90s Disney's animation.
It's Don Bluth!
Don Bluth, man.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.